Buongiorno everybody and welcome to a new episode of the ID Element Show in a special all about the Uprove Community Technical Preview. I'm here today with Christian Paquin and Greg Thompson, who worked very hard to bring to you this community preview. Hi Christian, hi Greg.
Hello.
How's it going guys? Thank you so much for having me for shooting this interview, which the community awaited for a very long time. So before we actually get into the heart of the matter, it would be nice to know a bit more about you guys. So, Christian, why don't you start and you tell us a bit about yourself, Microsoft, Uprove, life, universe, whatever comes to your mind.
Yeah, well, okay, I'll start with the universe story. It's
gonna be all right. Great.
So I have a cryptographer and security architecture background. I studied, believe it or not, I did some research in quantum cryptography back in the days in Montreal. Then when I started in the industry, started for a company called Zero Knowledge Systems. That's where I met Stefan Brands in Montreal. So that was a long time ago, building privacy and insight technologies. And stayed in the field of security, and then ended up, after multiple years, at Credentica, where we developed Uproof. And after the acquisition, we moved here. That was 2 years ago. I've been working on the Uproof technology and its integration into the Microsoft platform ever since. So that's pretty much it.
Nice. Quantum cryptography, huh? I'll be scared now every time I walk in your office. Thank you for your note. That's really nice. And Greg, how about you?
Well, I have more of a classical software engineering background. Somewhere around the late 90s, I started focusing on security and working for companies that were doing various security products and networking systems. And through happenstance, I ended up meeting Stefan in about 2003. And he and I kept in touch, and eventually we got together and I worked with him at Credentica. And then fast forward to 2 years ago in the acquisition, and here we are.
Nice. Thank you. Great. So you confirm that you are the right people, the best people to actually discuss the topic today. And in fact, again, Christian, it would be great if you could position for us Uprove in the context of a larger industry effort, like what we came to know as the identity metasystem.
Right. So actually, it's very interesting, and I'm very excited to talk about this. I've been working on the technology now for many years, and we're very happy to be able to release it. So that's what the CTP, which just released, is all about, to show how this great technology, which can do many things, and then I'm referring you to a session that Stefan did, that you can learn more about the technology. We only use a very small subset of the features, and we integrated it into the identity metasystem. And that's what I'm going to describe now. So first, just as a reminder, what's Uprove? If you know nothing about it, it's actually quite simple what it is. It's basically a set of cryptographic protocols that allow us to build a new security token type, which is called the Uprove token. If you're familiar with PKI, you can think of it as an XAV9 certificate. If you're familiar with Federation protocols, you can think about it as a SAML token. So it's just a container of claims, but it has two main differences with these conventional cryptographic tokens. The first difference is how these tokens are issued to you as a user. So conventional tokens, be it SAML certificate, SAML token, they're issued by an issuer, provided to you as the user, and they're signed by the issuer to make sure the user can modify the values and to make sure the authenticity of the origin of the token. So that's fine, but the signature by the issuer is basically a unique number. It's a unique fingerprint, digital fingerprint, that's been issued to you from one party and that you present as is to another party. So even if you would disclose very minimal data about yourself, the token could say I'm over 21, which might be very privacy protecting, but the container of this data has a unique number in it, which could leak more information about yourself and allow collusions, attackers either by mistake, companies get merged, databases get merged, people leak data all the time. So it doesn't support the minimal disclosure property that we want in the metasystem. Uprove tokens, on the other hand, they are issued in such a way, using very advanced cryptographic techniques, in a way that there's some randomization done by the user. It's an interactive protocol between the issuer and the user that removes these correlation handles. So you can think of it as you know, as just dollar bills. Imagine that I have two bills here. It's just like money, right? So they're issued to me by the bank, and I'm spending it. I may feel like I'm, you know, my privacy is protected. I'm just disclosing that's worth $20. That's worth $20. But it has a unique number on it, a serial number. And if the bank and the merchants would record them, then they would learn anything about everything about me. So U-proof tokens are basically like coins. They look alike for everybody at NSPEC. It's protection. You cannot learn to who it was provided based on the valid on the things they contain. So that's the first difference. The second one is what you can do once you have a token like this in your hand. What can you do? Again, PKI certificates and SAML tokens, the only thing you can do is present it. Maybe proving ownership by applying a private key, that's fine. But you don't have flexibility about this disclosure of the contents of these tokens. With U-proof tokens, on the other hand, you can selectively disclose any parts of it, of the claims that are encoded in there, without invalidating the issuer's signature on it. So if I would remove even one bit or change one bit in a SAML token, of course it would invalidate its signature. But with U-proof, you can actually do that. So imagine, like in real life, you know, we all have paper, like card, like a driver's license, like this. And if I only want to show I'm worth 21 to a bartender, I'd say, you know, I could, you know, put a little piece of paper in front of it, prove, see my picture, so that's my public key ultimately, and show my data, my don't zoom in too much on there because I don't want people to, you know, learn my age.
Yeah, you are overestimating the power of this little piece of one.
But I can only show a subset of the field without invalidating the token. Physically, it's very easy. Electronically, it was, you know, it's not really possible with conventional protection, like an RSA signature. But using the U-proof techniques, you can actually do that. And you can do a lot more powerful things that are not part in our first version of the protocols, but you know, wait for the next release or something. So given these two properties, the unlinkability of the issuance and presentation, and the minimal disclosure that you can do once you have a token, we can see how this novel token type brings a lot of value within the identity meta system. So I can just move to the board right now to make a clear explanation. So I assume that, you know, most of our viewers are very familiar with the identity meta system. So we have the usual parties, an identity provider that's going to provision some information about a client in order for the client, the user, to access a relying party. So given that, so U-proof tokens can be obtained the same way as normal, like SAML tokens could be, you can obtain them in real time and present a relying party. But because they support minimal disclosure, you can get them in advance. Once you're provisioned by the issuer, you can get all these U-proof tokens and keep them locally, and when you need to present some data to a relying party, you just pull one of them and present, selectively disclose what you want to the relying party. So we see that the selective disclosure capability maps very nicely to the design of information cards, because that's what an information card is. It's a description of claims that you can present to a relying party, and you don't always present all of them. You present a subset. So we can actually map that to the UI of the identity selector paradigm to these wire tokens, basically. And okay, so let's just go kind of to the flow of the U-proof protocols. So when an identity provider issues a U-proof token, it's going to sign them with its key pair. So there is a trust establishment, just like any PKI trust that needs to be established between these two parties. So usually this guy would need to send its CE certificate to accept anything that's going to issue.
So is this an actual certificate, like a classic X509, or is it a special U-proof flavor of certificate?
Yeah, so it's a special construct an artifact. It's called the issuer parameters. It describes many things. It contains a key pair to validate the signature on each token, and it also describes all the content of the tokens. So, for example, it says that this token is going to contain 5 attributes. The first one is going to be first name, second one, last name, date of birth, all these things. Because we try very hard to remove correlation handles from the cryptography. So we don't want to leak more data about the user in the XML encoding and everything. So we try to specify as much in advance publicly as an issuer that's a statement of what I can issue. It's a bit like a security policy. And eventually these things might migrate to constructs of the WSSR world, so in WS security policy, for example.
Okay.
In the CTP, it's a manual thing. We have tools to generate them, and you need to distribute them for all parties to trust them. So once that's done, I'll assume that the client is an identity selector and as an information card. It supports for information cards. So the user is going to get from the identity provider an information card, can list a bunch of fields of claim types, C1, C2, and then because of the selective disclosure capability, nothing prevents the client to request eProof tokens right there and get provisioned with many eProof tokens that certify all the claim values already. So I have a bunch of tokens that I can use later on at the relying party that are already issued to me. And
so to clarify differences with the usual model, so it means that you can ask for tokens without saying at this point which relying party you are going to use them, right?
Right. So eProof tokens are what we call unscoped tokens. So they're issued for a particular relying party, although this can certainly be the case. An issuer could specify this token can only be shown to this relying party. But in general, the basic model is it's not. You get these, and just like you can show the cards in your wallet to anybody, you can do the same with eProof tokens. And then later, when the user visits a relying party that wants to see claim types C3 and C5, let's say, that's exposed exactly the same way as it's done for any information card presentation. We didn't change anything when all these guys express their requirements. And now the identity selector will interpret this and will match that, this information card matches the requirement of the relying party, so it's going to pop it up. The user can select it, and then what's going to happen, one of these tokens will be selected and presented to the relying party, only disclosing, in this case, the 2 claim values that are requested by the relying party. And because of the selective disclosure capability of the technology, nothing else can be learned by the relying party. And these fields are not encrypted away or encoded in an opaque manner that can be brute forced, as if they were never encoded in the first place in the token. And even if these guys were to collude, or even if they were the same person, I mean, you could issue you a voting ballot and you present it back to the same party, there's still no way for these guys to, based on the hidden data and the signature of the issuer, to figure out who the user was. I mean, of course, you can present your full name if you want, but would you present a very statistically neutral claim value? There's nothing more that can be learned about yourself, so which is a very strong property. So just a couple of clarification notes. So we do get multiple eProof tokens in batches, so like you don't have to go back every time, because we do delete each token every time they're used to protect your privacy. Because even though there's some randomization that's done here, when you present it, then you when you present it again, you would be linkable between these 2 interactions. So we do, just like sample tokens, you get one at a time, and you never reuse it. Here you just get them in advance to be provisioned, which allow you to use your card without connectivity with the identity provider, which is useful if in disconnected environments. If you're a mobile worker in an enterprise, you're just disconnected from your corporate network, could be a Kerberos backed card, and you can use it off the network without contacting your identity provider. Second clarification is, it's not the token that you use, you don't simply take a token and just post it back. We actually send what's called a presentation token, which is the token that you release, and a cryptographic proof that you are the owner of this token, because each of these are associated with a private key. Again, very similar to what the Xamarin certificate would be, and only the user is able to present the token. And the last thing I'd like to clarify is we have something specific for the PPID claim, so that's the personal identifier claim defined in the identity metasystem. It's a way to have a unique identity with each relying party. And typically, these are assigned to you by the identity provider. They keep the tables, and you're visiting relying party one, then you're known as ABC here. And if you're visiting relying party number two, you're known as XYZ. But in Federation Protocol, it means that the relying party, the identity provider is quite powerful. It could authenticate as you with these relying party without you being even aware of that. So in our case, the PPID is derived from the local data, from the token itself. It's basically a hash of the signature of the issuer and the public key in the token. So nobody, because of the unlinkability property, nobody, even the issuer, knows your PPID or knows that the PPID is associated with a particular user. And nobody can present it except you, because only the user is the owner of the private key. So when you use these, it means that you can present certified pseudonyms, but with stronger security than a typical federation protocols would allow. And the last thing I want to mention is that these PPID are presented with special, what we call PPID tokens. They're just empty tokens that have no claims, because claim values could change over time. You would get new ones. The expiry date set by the issuer could be quite small compared to a PPID, which is supposed to be a longer live. So the PPID tokens are just empty key pairs, basically, that allow you to keep them for a long time. So that provides the overview of the system, what can be done. Again, getting the tokens, presenting them with the unlinkability property, and given these and the long-lived nature of these tokens, the ability to present the minimal disclosure, the minimal information that you need for a specific unanticipated transaction. So that's the integration.
Nice. Thanks. That was very, very clear. And I can clearly see the value of using these in this context, since finally the selective disclosure is actually possible without having to rely on the identity provider being honest, which if you trust it, it means that you usually think so, but you know.
It's a more stronger threat models, basically. Exactly.
Yeah, that's really nice. That's beautiful. All right, so Craig, let's get our hands dirty. How is this stuff going to be used by the developers with VCTP?
Well, so we're extremely excited to be able to release some products along with this, or CTP versions of products. So we're releasing versions for all three of our target audiences that we have current products for. So that's CardSpace on the client side. That's an extension for the Windows Identity Foundation for developers who are building security token services or building relying party applications, as well as a new version of ADFS that has uProof support built in. So if you're going to have an issuer or a relying party STS built with ADFS, through some simple configuration, you can reap all the benefits of the technology.
Wow. Is this something that you put on top of of your ADFS or WF, or there is a special build that you download and you install?
Well, in the case of CardSpace and ADFS, it's a special build that incorporates the full product with uProof, all together, the chocolate and the peanut butter mixed together for you. For Windows Identity Foundation, because of the extensibility model of the framework itself, we were able to build an extension that you just sort of install on top of your existing WIF install to give you the extra functionality. And in that case, if you are integrating into your own applications, you would make some small changes to your applications to enable the new functionality. So if you'd like, I can go into a little more detail on all three of the products.
By all means.
Okay. Well, I'll start with CartSpace, and I'll stand here at the whiteboard and maybe do some gesturing and drawing as I talk. So for the client component, one of our goals was to make a CartSpace client with uProof functionality in such a way that the end user doesn't need to be concerned about the extra management that's going on for the tokens. I mean, as you heard the description that Christian just gave, there's potentially a lot of things going on the client side. And CartSpace, as it is already hard enough to understand. And adding in extra work of, you know, do I have tokens for this transaction? We didn't want to do that. So we just want to make it's the CartSpace flow. You know, you have to presuppose that you have CartSpace installed. So an identity provider is going to provision a card for you, and that could happen either on your enterprise, it could be pushed down through group policy, or it could be a link you click on a web page. So when this card is installed in the card space, you see that just the standard, do you want to install this card, do you trust the issuer? Once you've made that decision, the card is imported and it's ready for use. Now, in the enterprise case, where you know potentially it could have been pushed through group policy, we added some more capabilities to that the group policy engine in CartSpace, so that when the card is installed, CartSpace will check group policy to see if there's an indication that the issuer would like to pre-provision tokens before you even use the card. So this is especially convenient for the disconnected scenarios that Christian mentioned, where you know, you may receive a card for your corporation and then immediately unplug your laptop and run off to a partner site, or maybe you're going home at the end of the day and you're going to want to check your benefits from home. So in that case, you'd want to be able to use your card at our line party without contacting your identity provider. So in that case, when you install the card, CartSpace will go ahead and talk to the identity provider, request a batch of tokens, and store them for use immediately or the next day or for the lifetime of those tokens. So that's one of the changes. Another change is in the user experience. When you, let's say you visit a site, typically CartSpace is going to pop up the card chooser, which is going to show you pictures of the cards that match the policy. And then you pick the one that you want to present. And in the case of a card that requires a username and password, we're going to do credential collection right there on the spot. Well, if we already have tokens, we don't have to do credential collection. So we're actually simplifying the user's experience in the case where you have tokens as a username and password card. In essence, the card, if you have tokens, it looks just like a Kerberos card or a cert card, where you pick it, and you can immediately click on the link that says what information might be sent, which in the traditional case, that would cause CartSpace to go off and do a WS Trust conversation with the issuer to obtain tokens. Well, we already have them, so we can immediately pull the data out, generate the token that would be sent, and display the information to you that so you can make the informed decision, do I want to send this to the line party? And on that same note, we actually have a better experience than the traditional identity system model. So when we do token issuance, in the traditional model, the display token that's sent by the identity provider, there's no connection between that display token and the actual security token that you'll be submitting. So we're already trusting the identity provider, so we trust they're going to show us the information that's going to be disclosed so that we can make that informed consent decision. But in our case, we receive CartSpace through the uProof protocols, knows all of the attributes that are encoded into the tokens, and it sees the display token provided by the identity provider. So when we're going to disclose, see in this example, claim 3 and claim 5, we have a display token from the IDP that has those claims. So we can choose those two and show them in the display token. So we know, as a user, that only claim 2 and claim 5 are being disclosed. So it's not the case that the IDP could surreptitiously put in claim 4 there and just not put it in the display token.
Yeah, and just for the viewers who are not super familiar with the CartSpace model, let me just add this little clarification. What Greg is referring to is the case in which when you get a traditional token, that token can be encrypted for the relying party. So as a client, you just see this opaque thing, but you can't look inside. So there is this thing that Greg mentioned, is the display token, which contains in the clear or in a way that you can actually as a client see inside the values of those claims. But you substantially have to trust the identity provider to put the same values of those claims in the display token, because there is no cryptographic relationship between the actual token and the display token. And instead here, one of the many magics that we are seeing that UProv is doing is, how to say, that there is actually such a relationship. Then I just added this so that people can
thank you for the clarification.
Completely appreciate the magnitude of this.
Yes, yes. Other minor changes that we made to functionality, since we do store these tokens on disk, when you delete a card, we naturally purge all of that information so we don't have any stale data left behind. Over time, an identity provider may want to change the set of claims that their cards support. Let's say your administrator adds some new values into your Active Directory and they want that to be reflected in the cards that users have. So they may update the card and update the claim set. When you install a newer version of a card in CardSpace, we go ahead and delete all of the claim tokens that we have around, figuring that, well, these may reflect the old state, but the next time we use the card, we want to get new claim tokens containing the correct set of claims so that we can present them. And as I mentioned before, the same group policy applies there as well. So when you install an updated card, if the administrator of your domain has configured it, the client may just automatically get the new claim token so they're ready for use. Other changes in CardSpace, that's pretty much it. So from the user's point of view, it's just CardSpace, but under the covers we have a lot going on. And you may have wondered about the storage of these tokens, since, as Crispin mentioned, there are private keys associated with each one. The claim values themselves are stored on disk, so you may be wondering how we protect those. So just briefly, we use DP API, which is one of the Windows security system provided by Windows, which provides a strong encryption tied to your user session on your computer. So another person who logs into your computer, if you're using a server, or someone steals your computer and they figure out the admin password for their computer, but they don't know your user password, they won't be able to decrypt the tokens and use them. Furthermore, the files, we protect them using access control lists on the files themselves. So even you, as a user on the computer, don't have access to those files. Only the secure service that is CardSpace can access them. So we take take security very seriously, and we take all the precautions that we can to make sure that these can't be stolen from your computer and used by someone else, or that malicious software on your computer can't get at them without your knowledge.
That's very reassuring.
Very similar to Alex. Online certificates are protected during Windows.
Right.
Yeah. So you have your little private certificate store, but instead of certificate, you have UProv tokens. That's great. So what did you have to do to ADFS for teaching it to actually talk UProv?
Well, before I tell you about ADFS, I'd like to tell you about the .if extension, because that sort of leads naturally, because we ate our own dog food, as it were. So you're probably aware that ADFS is built on top of .if. It uses .if to do all of its magic. So we started out by looking at .if to see, well, do we need to get deep down into the guts of .if? Or can we build an extension? And we realized that WIF is extensible enough that we could simply build an extension. So our extension package has a set of classes for the core crypto operations. So that's generating the issuer parameters that an issuer needs to issue tokens, exporting signed copies of those, because you want to, any relying party that receives them wants to be assured of the authenticity. Classes for performing the issuer side of the token issuing protocol, the client side of the issuing protocol, client side of presenting tokens, verifying presentation proofs, all of that. So we have a set of classes just for performing those basic operations on the UProv tokens as they've been specified for the identity meta system integration. Then on top of that, we've made some, so if you want to make your own STS, we have, WIF provides a security token service class. And this has a couple of abstract methods on it that a developer of a custom STS would override. So we made a subclass of that that's the UProv STS class. And it has the same methods that you need to override to provide the claims that are going to be in the issued tokens, to provide hooks for the scope of the tokens if you want to have the values encrypted for a particular RP. All of that's the same. We've added a few new configuration options. For example, to perform the issuing, when the STS class gets a request, from a client, "Hi, I'd like to get some tokens, please," the STS class is going to have access to the issuer parameters, to the private key. So when you configure an instance of this, you have to provide an implementation of a storage interface so that the implementation here can find the private key, basically, that it'll use to issue the tokens. That's basically the main piece of configuration. Since we have in the WS Trust Exchange, and you can take a look at the spec to see exactly what the details are there, but we have some extra elements in the request security token message and in the request security token response messages. So to handle those, we have some extra serialization classes that if you have your own customizations, you'll need to derive from the uProof specific versions of those. As well, the number trust of, contract. I'm sorry.
The number of tokens that you want to issue.
Yeah, all of these things, the number of tokens to be issued, the lifetime of the tokens, all of these are configured through the normal config. We added some new properties for them, but it's all, if you're familiar with how the STS class works, it's all very familiar for you. The trust contract, we had to make a new trust contract to support the fact that we have this sort of four-legged trust exchange. So it's a request, a response, and then another back and forth. So if you've had a reason to customize the trust contract, again, you just change your implementation to derive from the uProof version rather than the core WIF version. So that's fundamentally the WIF integration. Yes.
Well, very consuming. That's I'd say I can see a few people actually doing the STS, but a lot of people will want to consume this stuff.
Yes. So on the relying party side, the story is actually much simpler. For WIF relying parties, they typically have a security token handler collection with handlers for all of the different kinds of tokens they'll consume, you know, SAML tokens, username password tokens. So we have a handler for uProof tokens, of course, and you simply install that into your collection of handlers for your application, and likewise point it to a store of trusted issuer parameters, so the parameters by the issuers that you trust. And then the rest is pretty much taken care of for you.
So that's great. And that's only for the active case, I guess. Like you are processing active tokens, or do you also support redirection protocols like WS Federation?
Well, if you can get any kind of security token through the Federation redirection, then it would support that as well. So any place where you would use a security token handler collection to handle verifying different kinds of tokens, it would apply.
So that would interoperate with a FAM as well, the classic H3 module.
That's not a case, that's not been one of our primary cases that we've addressed, but I believe it should work just
okay. Fine. So, and in VCTP, you are shipping samples, right?
Yes.
Developer samples. So which kind of scenarios are you showing off in those samples?
In our sample for that's in the WIF package, we have an issuer that can provision an information card, it can issue tokens for it, and then we have a relying party that it's quite simple. You know, as the user, you can choose what claims you want the relying party to ask for, and then card space will pop up and you present those, and it displays the claim values for you, as well as showing you what the presentation token looks like, so you can get a feel for, you know, what's inside this XML blob, what does it look like, how big is it.
So how did we package this? Like, do we have a single package that has both the WIF extension and the special version of CardSpace? Or you go in different places and you download?
We have one MSI for CardSpace, we have one MSI for the WIF extension, and we'll have one MSI for the ADFS
okay.
As well. So, might as well talk about ADFS now.
All right.
So, now that you see what we've done for WIF, basically, as I said, we just ate our own dog food. We took ADFS, and in this case, we did have to modify the product itself. That's why we have a special CTP build of ADFS. And we essentially just made the substitutions that I mentioned earlier. We changed the STS class to derive from the uProof STS. Added ADFS has a policy database that contains things like the certificates of trusted issuers, the certificates that are used to sign tokens that go out. Actually, that's part of the configuration, not part of the policy database. So we've added some elements to the different databases so that the issuer parameters for an issuer of uProof tokens are stored in the config database. The trusted issuer parameters of relying party trusts are in the policy database, exactly as they are for normal X509 certificates. from a management point of view, we have not changed the management, the MMC snap in. So all of our management is through PowerShell commandlets right now. So we have commandlets for generating issuer parameters, for exporting signed issuer parameters, which Christian said right now, it's a manual process. When you export, you have to port this signed XML file to your relying parties. We have plans in the future for incorporating these into the Federation metadata and the more automated systems, but that'll come in a follow-on.
Mm-hmm. For experimenting, it's more than enough.
Yes,
in fact, one thing that I'm loving all this is that this CDP touches on all the points that you need to actually experiencing this. When we first came out with CardSpace, it was a fantastic idea, but CardSpace was just one component of the equation. And so people were left with WCF alone for relying parties, for identity providers. And instead now, all the pieces are provided. Like, you can get these, install a couple of MSIs, and you're already up and running, which is really, really great.
Yeah, it's been somewhat frustrating for us to have to wait so long to release this, but we're actually very happy to do what I think of as sort of the Big Bang release, where we hit all of the touch points together. And, you know, we have so many things planned that we'd like to be able to do to make the ADFS experience simpler for administrators, for example, but yeah, we had to draw a line somewhere so that we could release this new decade.
Absolutely.
So that's, in a nutshell, the products. And as I said, we're extremely excited to get them out and in the hands of people so we can start getting useful feedback on what features would be useful to have in subsequent releases, you know, things that we've left out, things we can do better, and we really are looking forward to good feedback.
That's great. So I think that was exactly what we needed for getting a more practical idea of what can be done with a CDP. So thank you, guys. I'm sure that, as usual, you will get flooded by feedback about this release, and both from the this time from developers, because until now you prove it was the domain of the thinkers of identity, and instead now finally you can actually open this guy in Visual Studio and touch with your hands the benefit, which I believe is very, very exciting.
I have one last point I'd like to mention, speaking of developers. So that's, you know, the Microsoft platform, but the part of the CDP goal is to allow other people to interoperate, to implement the technology so that we can have interoperable implementations. So that's why the specification has been released under the Open Specification Promise, just like WS Star and Information Card Protocol, anybody can implement them. And so the hard part is to implement the crypto. And we have already existing non-Microsoft identity software, but so that people don't have to implement the crypto part, we've provided two cryptographic SDKs too. Yeah, one a Java version and a .NET version.
Wow.
And they're available also on the CTP page, which I'm sure the link will be provided somewhere in the video. You can have access to all the specification, all these components, and links on the code gallery to the projects, the crypto ones. So you can take this crypto SDK and integrate it into existing identity stacks, basically. So we're looking forward to comments on that also.
Fantastic. That's definitely the icing on the cake. So thank you, guys, and I'm hoping that I'll have you again with some deeper developments as we go forward with our product.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you.